Well, here are two biographies that I've read recently. They are both good because they are so very, very honest. Anthea Turner's Fools Rush In. Can't believe that I've read that. Actually, Rico Tice gave it to me. It's absolutely true. It's got an inscription on the inside if you want to check it afterwards. And he gives it to me with love. That's nice, isn't it? Anyway, that's got nothing to do with anything. And John McEnroe's book, Serious. The one thing that has stood out for me as I've read these two books recently is how both Anthea Turner and John McEnroe have been put off Jesus Christ. Anthea Turner, a very successful television presenter, if you don't know her, begins her book describing how her 15-year-old younger sister died from spina bifida when Anthea was 18. And just days after that event, Anthea Turner attended her church youth group. And a well-meaning but insensitive Christian made a remark that offended Anthea Turner so much that she writes this: "I decided there and then that Jesus and God weren't all they were cracked up to be. It is still an area of my life that I haven't fully worked out." John McEnroe, arguably one of the greatest tennis players of all time, described his background like this: "My parents were church-going Catholics. My brothers and I had all been baptized and confirmed, and I'd gone to Mass every week until I was 18. Even though I decided for myself that organized religion was a sham, and that God, if he exists, must be deaf, dumb and blind, Catholic guilt doesn't go away easily," he says. Jesus and God aren't all they're cracked up to be. Organized religion is a sham that left John McEnroe full of guilt. You see, they've both been put off Jesus Christ, not by looking at Jesus Christ, but by Christians or attending church. And I regularly meet people like them. Maybe you're one of them. People who find church boring or irrelevant and Christians hypocritical. Maybe you relate to that. It may be that your experience of Christians and church has been far from satisfactory. Well, look, this evening we're saying, please don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you're a guest here, I hope that this evening's experience of church has been quite a pleasant surprise. But whatever you've thought of this evening so far, we're saying, just as you don't judge a book by its cover, please don't judge Jesus by the church or by Christians. This evening, we want you to come face to face with Jesus Christ and to let him speak for himself. And that's why we want you to turn in your Bible to Luke chapter 5, page 1032. We join the story in verse 1 at the shore of Lake Gennesaret with Jesus preaching and people crowding around him. And the key word there is crowding. So, verse 2, Jesus saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. It's easy to picture the scene, isn't it? Jesus used Simon's boat as a floating pulpit. Being a little way out to sea, Jesus was able to continue preaching without being crushed by the crowd, and the huge crowds that had gathered on the beach were able to hear every word. And so the owner of the boat, Simon, found himself with Jesus in the boat. And when, verse 4, Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let the nets down for a catch." And now here's where the story gets really interesting. Here is where the preacher turned fisherman. Now look, if your view of Jesus is that he's for the religious bits of life, then at this point, here in verse 4, he is going way beyond his job description. Here the carpenter-come preacher is telling the fisherman how to do his job. It's like the vicar telling a fish farmer how to run his business, or a bishop telling the politicians how to run the country. Not that that ever happens, of course. If you think Jesus is for the religious bits of life alone, then this is totally inappropriate, which of course is how many people see it, even if they wouldn't state it that boldly. You know, people who call themselves C of E, which so often means C and E, Christmas and Easter, keeping Jesus for high days and holidays, he's for special occasions, but he's certainly not someone who has much to say on the rest of life. Well, let me ask you, where are you on this? Do you think Jesus should be kept to the religious section of life? And if you do, let me ask you, are you consistent in that position? If ever you fly with Indonesian Airways, when you board the plane, they will present you with one of these. It is an invocation card. Now, when you board an aeroplane, you always get, don't you, the airline in-flight magazine and the card with safety instructions. And then with Indonesian Airways, they give you this card, which is a card full of prayers. Prayers for a safe journey. It doesn't exactly fill you with confidence, does it? It's as if Indonesian Airways, as you step onto their aeroplane, are saying, if you're going to reach your destination in one piece with us, you better start praying. And so there are prayers in all sorts of languages. Here's one. Lord in heaven, we praise and thank thy blessings and endless love in our life. In this opportunity, we call on thy holy name to accompany our journey. Now, you know, as I came across that card, I wondered how many people used it. People who wouldn't dream of praying at any other time. People who think Jesus should be left in the religious section of life. People who certainly don't want Jesus interfering with their job or telling them how to raise their family or what to do with their money or how to use their leisure time or where to go on holiday. As they hurtle along the runway, suddenly they find themselves throwing up a quick prayer. Well, again, let me ask you, where are you on this? What do you think? Is Jesus someone you should keep just to the religious parts of life? Well, if you are, then you'll feel Jesus has gone far too far in verse 4. This is way beyond his remit. He's walked into Simon Peter's office and he's telling him how to do his day job or his night job. Whatever you make of it, it's a fascinating moment. But it gets even more interesting as Luke tells us in verse 5 that Simon and his partners had been fishing all night and they'd not caught a thing. And not because they only did this for a hobby and they just had one of those dreadful days down at the riverbank when there wasn't a nibble from the fish. No, these were experienced, expert fishermen. And having been at it all night, they knew this wasn't the time to start fishing again. Yet here is Jesus telling Simon, put the nets down for a catch. Now bear in mind that Simon is the fisherman and Jesus is the carpenter come preacher. Simon's response then does seem pretty gracious in verse 5. Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I'll let down the net. You see, in Simon's mind, there is no chance they catch anything. He knew these waters. He knew it was time to go home and get some sleep. After all, they'd been up all night on the night shift. It certainly wasn't time to start fishing all over again. Yet that is exactly what Simon Peter was prepared to do. And it's even more amazing when you look back to verse 2 and you see that they just washed the nets. Now look, I don't know anything about fishing, but I presume that washing the nets was that glossy job that you had to do at the end of the day. Yeah, but a crucial one, to keep them in good condition. So if they put the nets down again, they'd have to wash them all over again. There's nothing more annoying, is there, than having to redo glossy jobs. But that's what he did. Even though he thought the whole exercise would be fruitless. And end of verse 5, because you say so, I will. And then we read verse 6, when he'd done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break, so they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. What a catch. It was a miracle. The fishermen had been fishing all night and hadn't caught a thing, not a nibble. And yet here was Jesus of Nazareth, raised in the country, miles from the coast. This Jesus had come along and given them the biggest haul that they had ever had. It was a miracle. And Simon Peter knew it. Not only because they'd been fishing all night without catching a thing, but look at the boat. They began to sink, verse 7. This was no normal haul. They'd never seen anything like this before. It was a miracle. And this miracle showed Simon Peter exactly who Jesus is. And boy, did he get the point. Just look at his response in verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man." He fell at his knees and he called him Lord. This is the moment when Jesus' true identity became abundantly clear to Simon Peter. At exactly this point, Peter knew who Jesus was, that he is the Lord. The Lord of fish and fishermen, the Lord of the sea and sailors, the Lord of nature, the one who made the world, the one who made everything we see around us, the one who created the fish and the sea and the waves and the one who made Simon Peter. You see, this is Jesus' world. He made it. He owns it. Everything in it. And that includes you and me and Peter and everyone. He owns us. Well, hey, this was no fluke. This was no one-off. Jesus performed other miracles over nature. In chapter 8 of Luke's Gospel, we see him calming a raging storm. Again, Simon Peter was in the boat, along with some others. The whole crew were terrified, grabbing for their invocation cards. Hardened fishermen who thought they were going to die. This storm was so furious. And just when they thought they were doomed, Jesus stood in the boat and he said to the raging storm, "Be still!" And instantly the water was calm. Now look, that is very impressive. And I tell you, there have been plenty of occasions when I wish that I could do that. And before we had children, every year, Caroline, my wife and I, used to go skiing. Being on a tight budget, rather than fly, we crossed the channel by ferry. But I hated it. I mean, I really wish we'd flown. I hated it so much. And my dad was in the Navy, but he certainly didn't pass his sea legs on to me. Every time we went on the ferry, I would get as sick as a dog. So I'd just sit outside the toilets for the whole of the two-hour crossing and spend quite a lot of the time in the toilets as well. I will never forget the worst crossing of all. As we drove onto the ferry, the crew were securing all the vehicles with ropes. That had never happened before. I knew we were in for a rough crossing. And so as others headed for the smorgasbord to the restaurant to enjoy a lovely meal, I took my customary position, camped outside the toilets. I tell you, I felt so sick on that journey. When I could stand it no longer, I looked up at Caroline, and in a pathetic little voice, I said to her, "Caroline, how much longer before we get there?" It's like a little boy in the back of the car. "How much longer?" And I will never forget how she looked at me and said, "Paul, we haven't left the harbour yet." I felt so sick on those journeys. So sick. What I'd have done to be able to go up on deck and command the wind and the waves, "Be still. Stop." Well, of course, I didn't try it. There was no point. And if I had tried it, well, then you'd have come to the conclusion that I was far more sick than you ever thought I was. You and I can't control the wind and the waves, but Jesus did. The storm stopped instantly. Jesus calmed the storm. He caught this huge haul of fish, and he even walked on water. Who is this man walking on water, calming a storm, catching a fish of this proportion? See, when Jesus came to planet Earth, he walked around as if he owned the place. Because he does. That's what Simon Peter recognized. Verse 8, he fell at his knees and he called him Lord. What a shock for Simon Peter. He was in the boat with the living God. And what a shock for anyone who wants to leave Jesus in the church. Who wants to put him in the religious section of their lives. Or leave him out of life altogether. Simon Peter knew what this meant. If Jesus really is the Lord, the one who made all of this stuff around us, well, then there's no area of life, no part of existence that is outside the control of Jesus Christ. Of course, that has huge implications, and Simon Peter realized them. Jesus is the Lord Almighty who made everything. Well, then of course he knows how to catch fish. That's easy. Jesus is the Lord of everything around us. Then it's not appropriate to leave him in the church. It's just not right to tuck him away for high days and holidays, Christmas and Easter, baptism, weddings and funerals. He's created us. We must not keep him at arm's length. It is wrong to presume that he has nothing to do with everyday life. He made every day and everyday life. And so it is actually outrageous to leave him out or to tell him to get out of our lives. Simon Peter realized that. And it hit him like a ton of bricks. Look at his response in verse 8. "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." You see, that is what sin is. To think that we know better than Jesus. I know better, more about fishing than Jesus. Or to push him out of our lives. To ignore him. To live life without him. That is sin. See, even if you're polite about it or you respect him as a great teacher, as Simon Peter did, when you don't allow Jesus to direct your life, you are a sinner. Now look, I'm not being rude when I'm saying you're a sinner. I'm not calling into question your moral integrity. I'm not saying you're a social outcast. I'm not suggesting you're a murderer or a thief, an adulterer or a dentist. You're a sinner and I'm a sinner because to a greater or lesser extent we keep Jesus at arm's length. We leave him in the religious section of life. That's what Simon Peter realized as he witnessed this astonishing catch of fish. And so he said, "Go away from me," verse 8. "I'm a sinful man." And he said, "I'm a sinful man," because you see it there in verse 9, "for he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they'd taken." Simon Peter didn't expect Jesus to catch a sprat, let alone a haul of fish on this scale, because he hadn't recognized that Jesus was Lord over nature. What a shock then for Simon Peter to realize that he was in the presence of greatness. in the presence of the Lord Almighty. What a shock for Simon Peter as he went back over the conversation that he just had. Verse 5, because you say so, I will let down the net, but I don't expect to catch anything, verse 9. Caroline and I were on holiday in Italy. It sounds like we only ever go on holiday, doesn't it? But we do some work some of the time. We were on holiday in Italy some years ago in Lake Garda. It was a wonderful holiday in a beautiful part of the world. And unusually for us, we stayed in a hotel. We felt very grown up. We had half board. It's one of those hotels where you're allocated a table to eat at in the restaurant for the week. So breakfast and evening meal, we went to the same table, a table for four. And the hotel was full. So we found ourselves eating with a delightful couple from Scotland. We had pleasant conversations whenever we ate at the same time, about the weather, about the resort, about home. I asked him what he did for a job. Company director, he told me. And he spoke quite a lot about his company, told me quite a few of the details of his job. But they didn't ask me or Caroline about our jobs. Eventually it came up that Caroline was a children's nurse, but it wasn't until about 5 days into the holiday that they asked me, well, what do you do then? Well, I said, you know, I'm very tempted to see if you can guess, because I don't think you'll ever guess, I said to them. Now, that should have given them a hint to go for something really a bit off the wall. But I must say, they weren't very imaginative at all, and the first guess, and indeed the only guess, was accountant. Now, you know, I'm not sure whether that was a compliment or not. I mean, I don't know whether they thought I was clever enough to be an accountant or whether I was really that boring. Now, apologies to all accountants here. Well, eventually I put them out of their misery and I said, look, I'm a vicar. And then there was a moment's silence when they scrolled back in their minds all the conversations that we've had over the last 4 or 5 days. There was this moment of silence. And then the husband said to me, that tax evasion issue I told you about. It's a true story. See, in his mind, he'd scrolled back the conversations that we'd had over the past few days, and as soon as he knew I was a vicar, he had to justify himself. Now, if that's how a man felt speaking to me, an ordinary bloke, imagine how Simon Peter felt when he realised that he'd been speaking to Jesus. Never mind Simon Peter, what about you? Just think about it for a moment. Now, think back over the times when you've said things that are offensive to Jesus Christ, used his name as a swear word, not had time for him, simply never given him a second thought, only gone to him when you needed him. Think of the times when you've misused his creation, treated other people badly. He created other people, walked all over them, put them down, used them, abused them. Now think of those times, and now imagine it all being recorded here on tape. Imagine that Jesus hasn't missed a word, an action, or a thought. And imagine that he's standing in front of you holding the tape. Then you know how Simon Peter felt. Then you know why he said, verse 8, go away from me, depart from me, I am a sinful man. Now for some here this evening, it's dawning on you. You're beginning to realise that you've done the unthinkable as far as Jesus Christ is concerned. You've left the Lord of all creation out of your life. You've kept him at arm's length, and he knows all about it. Oh, you may have been polite enough about it. There's no getting away from it. You've shut him out of your life. And now, like Simon Peter, you can't look Jesus in the eye. Well, look, here's a wonderful surprise for you. Even though Simon Peter said, go away from me, Jesus didn't walk away. Look at verse 10. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you'll catch men. So they pulled up their boats up on shore, left everything and followed him. Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful surprise? Jesus is still interested in Simon Peter. More than interested, he's enlisted him and his companions to be involved in his work. You see, the good news is that there is a fresh start with Jesus Christ. The slate can be wiped clean, the past forgotten. All of this wiped off. See, because a few years later, after this event, Jesus Christ died on a cross. He died so that we could be forgiven. On the cross, he took the punishment that we deserve for ignoring him. When I was at theological college training to do this job, a college that a friend of mine affectionately calls Vicar Factory, when I was at Vicar Factory, one of the lecturers, who's a friend of mine, was listening to a sermon of another student. He had to assess how well he'd done. And this lecturer went into his study, and he took the tape out of the box, and he put it into his tape recorder, pressed the button, and just as he did that, the telephone rang. He picked up the telephone and had one of those conversations that went on for much longer than he thought it would. And as he put down the phone, he thought, what was I doing? And then he saw the tape recorder going round and round and round with no sound coming out. And to his horror, he'd rather than press the play button, he pressed the record button. The whole thing had been wiped out. This dear chap's sermon could never be heard again. The entire sermon was erased. That is something of what Jesus Christ did when he died on a cross. Not just with a sermon tape, but with your life and mine. He wiped it clean. All those times when we've ignored him, when we've rebelled against him, when we've held him at arm's length, when we've wanted to keep him in the religious section of our lives, he says, I'll take the punishment for you. The tape can be wiped clean. I love you so much that even though you deserve to take the punishment, I'll take it for you. I'll die in your place. You can have a fresh start. For me, it was 20 years ago this year that I first understood how all this came together. I've been a churchgoer all my life, always believed God was there, but I can't begin to say that that belief ever had any real impact on my life, except that I went to church. I knew nothing of allowing Jesus to direct everything I did, as Cully said earlier. That was a key thing that she had to come to terms with. And then somebody explained that Jesus died for me so that I could have a fresh start. Put the past behind. Wipe the slate clean. As I started again with Jesus Christ. What about you? Yeah, have you been keeping Jesus at arm's length? At best, not involving him in your life, at worst, deliberately rejecting him. Amazingly, you can have a fresh start. Forget the past. Begin again, from today, if you want. And some here this evening will want to take a step towards that new beginning. You may want to investigate further if Jesus really is this Lord of all creation, as we've been saying this evening. You may want to think further about what it actually means to follow him. What will that look like if I'm going to start saying, yeah, he is that, and I'm going to hand my life over to him? What will it look like? Well, again, let me remind you about Christianity Explored. We've mentioned it many times because so many of us here are thrilled by the course as a great way to discover these things. And again, let me remind you that on the bottom of the service order, there's a little coupon that you can fill in and put it in the red boxes on the way out. And somebody will get in touch with you. Or just turn up on the 29th of January at 7 o'clock, same place, downstairs. Well, this is an ideal opportunity and an ideal environment in which you can think these questions through. Or alternatively, somebody may be saying, I want to take a step now, tonight. I don't want to wait till the 29th of January. Well, I've got some booklets and some friends of mine who are on the front row have got some booklets as well. Richard will have some. Katie's got some. Rupert's got some. Anyone you know who works here at All Souls will have some of these. And if you just take them, I'd like one of those. If on the way out you grab me and say, I'd like one, then you can have one. And that'll tell you more about the next step for you. Thanks very much for listening.